Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Yo, Mac, I don't even understand how they didn't understand you and that Mary Joy.
Yeah, I
Kick
know,
that
man.
Old robotic, futuristic George Jetson.
Yeah,
crazy joy.
Just like Uniblab. Robotic kicking flab. A flavor bit of batter. Chitter chatter, madder than the Mad Hatter. I bet you buy shit, come my fatter. I got the data to turn your body into antimatter. And just like a piece of sizzling, you'll fit inside my stomach with the eggs and grits between. The king is what I mean.
Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the latest edition of Pod is War. As always, Pod is War is brought to you by the good folks at ChairShot Radio Network in conjunction with TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. I'm Christopher Platt, and as always, I have the esteemed privilege and pleasure, I say those use loosely, being joined by Mr. Andrew Blass.
Yes, Snowflake is sick as a diarrhea cake right now, so let's not talk too much while my throat's actually working. Oy.
Thank God. We might actually have a decent episode this time, ladies and gentlemen.
I walked into that one.
You kind of did. We're also joined by our moderator, ladies and gentlemen. Put your hands together and show your love for Mr. PC Tunney.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Woo, Hannibal Lecter in the house? Hannibal Lecter, Tunney? Is that what we got going on?
Damn. But skipping before your line, just going creepy. Nice.
All right, fair enough. All right. He has a sinister look. You got lust in your eyes, man.
Oh, God.
Hey, before we get started, man, a little bit of house cleaning notes here, man. First and foremost, as you saw, we played Craig Mack's Flavor in Your Ear to open up the show. Craig Mack, unfortunately, transitioned a couple of days ago. I believe it was Tuesday. 46 years old, man. That's kind of crazy. Died of congestive heart failure. So, you know, I just wanted to send a special RIP to Craig Mack, the gentleman who kicked off the entire bad boy regime, man, for better or worse. That was the song and the artist that started it all. So RIP to him. And we also got to spend a special RIP to Stephen Hawking, who also passed away, I believe, on Wednesday. Noted scientist, absolutely brilliant guy. For those of you that don't know, he was the dude in the wheelchair, and he talked like this because he would talk through his voice box or talk through his computer. Absolutely brilliant guy. If you're not familiar with his work, you need to check it out. So RIP to both Craig Mack and Stephen Hawking.
True.
Yeah. So I don't know how much voice you got left, boss. So let's go ahead and get this show on the road, bro.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going with this. Try to keep my answer short.
Thank God.
John Cena versus The Undertaker. Is this actually going to happen?
Balls, I kind of feel like it has to at this point. I know one of Vince's mantras in the past has been that you don't promise something that you can't deliver to the fans. Now, recent years, he has kind of gone back on that with the whole Daniel Bryan thing, you know, because obviously he's not going to wrestle. But that seems to be his mantra. And it's just weird. I don't understand at this point, 4 weeks out from the big event, why Cena would call out Undertaker if that's not where they're going to go. Because at this point, you've already whet the fans' appetite for it. So unless you can get Jesus Christ to come and wrestle Cena at Mania, I don't know any other big name out there that you're going to possibly be able to get. And according to the Pro Wrestling Observer, Jesus is kind of, he's kind of got a little heat with WWE because his dad was forced to do the job to Vince. So I don't think that's. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Cena's been very desperate these last couple weeks, last month or so, trying to find a way onto the Mania card. So this is just the last trick he has up his sleeve. Just call out the Undertaker, the guy synonymous with WrestleMania. And like I said, it's a desperate move. And what stops anybody from doing that at any other point? Just, it sets a bad precedent if this works, where why can't Elias just be like, CM Punk, I challenge you. You have to come out here. Or, you know, Bobby Lashley, or, you know, something, or The Undertaker himself. Like, since when does calling out and trying to make your own match like that when you've already failed in multiple different iterations? Since when does that actually hold water in wrestling?
When you're Cena.
That's a very, very weak answer, and you know that.
That's the best answer. It's John Cena and The Undertaker. Who wouldn't want to see that match? I'm still not convinced that it's happening. I just don't see how they could be teasing it so strong this short a time out from WrestleMania if that's not where we're heading.
I mean, I think it's just a play because he knows it'll get the crowd popping. He knows it'll get everybody talking and thinking, oh, well, were we right that he's going to come back? Was he really retired? Oh, what's Cena going to do? Cena started with Taker. Now I don't want to see it. So I really hope it doesn't happen.
You know what I would love to see? It would be the ultimate troll move. So Cena, again, he comes on the mic. He calls out Taker again. The gong hits. He comes out with the microphone.
I'm retired. But he's not.
I didn't know we started an exorcism. Hold on, let me get the cross.
What the hell are you saying? That's the K theme. Was that not obvious?
I mean, it kind of was. I'll give you that one.
Thank you. I just think it would be the ultimate troll move. As the eye in the sky says, it wasn't obvious. Whatever. Ball's got my point. That's the point. I would love to see Cena come out, Undertaker come out and say, I'm retired, and then Kane comes out. Like, it would just be the ultimate troll move. The match would be the shits, but it'd be the ultimate troll move. I'd get a kick out of it.
I was about to say, less people want to see Kane do anything in the ring again. Let him just be a mayor. Let him leave. Let him stop. Like, no more Kane, please.
All right. Tell me how you really feel.
I think I just did. I'm just not going to go into too many more words because I don't have enough voice for that.
All right. Whatever you say, Tony Schiavone Jr. All right, I guess on to topic number two.
Braun Strowman has earned himself a shot at the WWE Tag Team Championships. Is this happening as a solo act, or do you see him pulling in a partner?
I mean, as I've been pimping on the Raw reaction when I did that with Harry and Tony, and I think I even posted it on Twitter, what I would really love, just for the ultimate trolly, funny kind of Braun move, because they've shown that he's got some comedy chops, I want him to declare stand-up bass as his tag team partner. That way, he can tag it in and hit the person with it, put the bass over top of him, and get the 1-2-3, because it's not a foreign object if it's your partner.
That's hilarious. I like that. I'm thinking James Ellsworth. I mean, obviously, he's probably not going to come back right now, and he's busy. He's busy wrestling some woman in some gym or barn out in Iowa right now, making $2,500. Get your money, James. I'm not mad at you. But I would love the visual of James, and because it's the closest thing. We can't really do Heath Slater, because Heath Slater's already kind of done that bit a little bit with Rhino, but just have James cowering in the corner, and Braun tags him in, and he just gets his ass beaten, and then he tags in Braun, and they win, and he's just celebrating very obnoxiously like James is known to do. But, I don't know where they're going with this. I think it's kind of a bad look to have Braun Strowman destroy the entire tag division. You know, just think about last year where we were at, or at the beginning of the year. When I say the beginning of the year, I mean the WWE year, which starts the day after Mania. And think about all the possibilities we had in the tag team division. We had the New Day on Raw. You had the Revival that just came up. You got Sheamus and Cesaro that were just hitting their stride. We eventually knew that the Shield would be back together in some iteration. Who else? You had the Club. Like, there were so many strong tag teams, and now it's been diminished to the point where Braun Strowman can eliminate everybody, and now he's allegedly, or apparently rather, challenging for the titles.
Well, the only good thing that comes from this, the saving grace, is the fact that there's supposed to be some kind of shakeup. I mean, I think Sheamus and Cesaro or somebody referenced it on Raw. So if you mix up the tag team division after you just buried them, it's not buried anymore. Plus, if you bring back Jeff Hardy and do the Woken Hardys, that's technically a fresh gimmick that could maybe do something with Braun, or, you know, challenge him. Maybe Matt and Bray could work together and do some kind of voodoo magic, and that's how they beat Braun, get them over together as, like, some supernatural weirdo team. So it's not dead and buried, but the fact that, as you were already saying, the WWE year is coming to a close, none of those teams really had a lot of momentum at the moment, so throw them in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal and just be done with it.
And that's really the problem with WWE presenting their product as more spectacle than sport, because it's very hard to get over a tag team division, and on that note, a cruiserweight division as well, because it's not presented as a legitimate sport. So, and clearly Vince has no need or use or want for a tag division, and he clearly lost interest very quickly with the cruiserweight division as well.
I mean, he lost interest years ago. People have been complaining about his lack of love for tag teams for a long time.
Yeah, that's true. And it sucks because, you know, when it's good, tag team wrestling can be phenomenal. You know, when it's in it.
That's where most of the good singles wrestlers came from. Like, Booker T came out of Harlem Heat. Shawn Michaels came out of the Rockers. You know, it's... And then, hell, even Steve Austin. You know, him and Pillman were together, the Hollywood Blondes. So... Yeah. I don't really think, with the, I guess even Rock, it wasn't a tag team, but he was part of a stable with the Nation, and that's kind of where he found his stride and got to be the Rock instead of Rocky Maivia, and Roman came from the Shield. So I think Vince just sees tag teams and stables as a conduit to becoming a bigger singles performer, and that tag teams somehow hold them back a little bit, because nobody puts P.S. Michael Hayes in the same category as, I'm trying to even think of one, I don't know, give me somebody, Platt, work with me here.
Ric Flair?
I mean, that's not fair.
Okay, fair enough. Kurt Hennig.
Steamboat, how about that? Or Kurt Hennig, even, there's a good one. So, like, nobody puts them in the same department, so... And the Freebirds were one of the better teams, stables, whatever you want to call it, from the 80s, so... I don't know. Maybe Vince has a point there. Tag teams just don't resonate as well in the West.
But we also had Party Jannetty and Leaf Cassidy. Party Jannetty come out of the New Rockers. We also had Heath Slater coming out of Slater and Gator. So, I mean, there is precedent that, yes, you can go on to bigger and better things when you leave your tag team.
This is true, and somebody's always a Jannetty, though. That's the problem.
There will be no Marty Jannetty, excuse me, there will be no Party Jannetty slander on these airwaves, man. I got nothing but love for Party Jannetty.
I've got no issue with Jannetty either. Wait, what?
He showed
what?
Me love in Dallas, so I got to have love for him back, man, even though he passed out drunk in the fountain and got arrested that night. But he came back like it was nothing, so shout out to Party Jannetty.
So he's got resolve, that's why you like him. He's got moxie, he's a good kid, eh?
That's my man. He showed me nothing but love in Dallas. Showed me a good time in Dallas. So shout out to Party Jannetty, man. We almost linked up in Vegas, man, but it just didn't work out. But shout out to Party Jannetty.
You need to get Marty Jannetty on one of these pods, then, if you're best bros with him like that.
Well, I can't say all that, but I'll see what I can do. I will say that.
There we go.
There you go. Right. Party, if you're listening, come on, man.
All right, I guess we can move on to the next question.
What will be the implications after Shane McMahon takes an ass-whooping from Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn throughout the arena?
Nobody takes an ass-whooping quite like a McMahon, so you got to give him props on that, man. You could have your hang-ups with him, but they take a hell of an ass-whooping. Like, am I lying on that, Balls? Come on, man.
No, you're right. They all get their ass kicked really, really well.
They do, man. So shout out to the McMahons on that, man. They know how to put people over in that aspect. Going into this SmackDown, man, we were all under the assumption there was going to be some of a threat between Shane and Zayn and Owens. But they, KO and Sami seem to have pulled the okey-doke on Shane. So it seems like he needs a tag team partner. Logical, rational speaking, it looks like it's going to be Dolph Ziggler. I don't know who else they can pull out their ass at this particular point in time. The irony of all ironies is this seems like a perfect place to put Cena. You know what I mean? I don't know what's going on with him and Taker, but this seems like this would have been the obvious perfect place for him, man, to come in here and he gets his big pop and his WrestleMania moment, and Shane gets to jump off the Superdome and have his moment, and it's all good, you know, because, you know, we got to get daddy's love somehow, right, Shane? So, but I don't really know... I mean, other than Dolph Ziggler, man, who could they possibly put in here to be Shane's partner? And I know people are going to say, oh, Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan's not wrestling for WWE, folks. It's just not happening, okay?
I'm still on the Cena train. I think that could be a good thing. Cena tries to call Taker for a couple weeks. That doesn't happen. Shane's probably not going to be on SmackDown for a few weeks after that beatdown he took. So Daniel will be trying to get people to, you know, fight for Shane or come to his aid. Maybe you have Zayn and Owens just beat the crap out of them as, you know, as Bryan goes to them, then they jump them to make sure they can't help or they don't want to help anymore. So Cena could definitely fit into this puzzle piece. And the best part to all of this, and it's not waking up because it's Folgers in your cup.
You stole my line.
I knew somebody was probably thinking it. That's why I said it. Taker has mad respect for Shane after their big match. And then Cena already called out Taker. So it's possible we still see Taker at Mania. He won't wrestle. But what stops him from tombstoning Kevin Owens to help out Shane and Cena? And then, you know, that's kind of Taker's way of saying, I do what I want on my time. You don't call me out, kid. Later. To Cena.
I do what I want on my time. You don't call me out, kid.
Yes.
No, nothing? Nothing. Not even a little bit, huh? I know you're sick. Work with me a little bit, man. I'm trying, man. I'm tap dancing over this Mellon Farmer, man. I'm gonna sing Kane's theme. You know what I mean? I did my Taker.
I mean, no one said you had to. Like, I think your Kane theme was closer than your Taker impression, though.
Well, your voice gotta said I had to, man. You sound like Peppermint Patty's brother.
Peppermint Patty had a brother?
Yes, and his name is Andrew Snowflake Balls.
Oh!
Yes.
Wait. If she's a lesbian, is he homosexual? How are we working with this?
You tell me.
This is your character creation.
I don't know what you do when you hop off these airwaves, bro. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know. You trying to tell us something?
Hey, you're making this go. Like, you're creative control right now, Jimmy Jacobs. Make it work. Come on. I could be the snowflake princess. You don't know. I always get what I want. I'm pretty. I'm white. It works. Let's go.
I'm coming out.
Oh.
I want the world to know. Gotta let them show. I like it.
I'll start singing some Frozen since I'm the snowflake princess. That's how that goes.
I like it. Let's go for it.
Let it go.
So for those of you that don't have the benefit of visuals right now, man, typically Snowflake Balls has this so beard going on. However, he's a little under the weather, as you can hear, so he shaved it. So he literally right now looks like 1986 Starcade Tony Schiavone. Like, literally, that's what we've got going on right now.
Hey, that's a good thing. Tony Schiavone was a pretty man. What can I say?
Well, at least one woman thought so.
And she had like 5 kids with him, so he put in work.
Yeah, good for him. You know, or he could just, those 5 times, man, he just forgot. Never mind. Let me not go there. We're trying to get sponsorship. Never mind.
That'd be a good segue for a sponsorship from Trojan. He forgot to put a condom on 5 times. You wouldn't forget if you were suited up with a Trojan.
Trojan.
There we go. We're hoping for some sponsorships. Trojan, come on.
Yes, they do. The Trojans also make Madden, so yeah, we could do that.
You just had to go there, didn't you?
A little bit.
They're good candy bars, what can I say?
What can I say, man? I've been tied down to one man, so you know. You can pretty much just ship the back up to Cooperstown at this point, man. I'm not going nowhere, neither is she. We in this for the long haul.
Well, then tie it in a knot and throw it over your shoulder, and we'll get to the next question.
Warring factions collide in a double shot of dynamite. First up, Will Ospreay battles Hiromu Takahashi for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship.
Oh, God!
Then Hiroki Goto faces Evil in the NEVER Openweight Championship at the New Beginning in Osaka.
Oh!
Jim Ross and Josh Barnett have the call.
Sunset Flip.
Oh!
all new New Japan Pro Wrestling, Friday on Access TV.
Gentlemen, let's talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling and the New Japan Cup.
That makes sense. That's nice after the commercial, too, so it all works. New Japan Cup. It's basically the baby G1, but instead of round robin, it's single elimination. And finally, for the first time in I'm pretty sure about 3 years, Hiroshi Tanahashi, the former ace, finally won his first round match. Like, it's so nice to actually see him not get upset by up-and-coming superstars or mid-carders just because the New Japan Cup has a lot more upsets and a lot more odd winners than the G1. The G1 is obviously a little more prestigious, a little more serious, so the better wrestlers normally come out on top, cream rises to the top kind of concept, but New Japan Cup's a little more wide open. The first day of round two happened on the 14th, and we saw Juice Robinson move on after being...
Shout out to Juice.
You would like Juice.
Of course Juice I would, Robinson, yes.
Beat Michael Elgin, who Michael Elgin was rolling him around, throwing him around, dominating him, buckle bombs, power bombs, treating him like a rag doll. But Juice managed to pull off the win with a roll up, and he looked so excited. I wasn't sure if he won or shit himself. Like,
you sound bitter about Juice's victory right now, though. I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
My only problem with it is that that's the same way he beat Omega in the G1, which got him the U.S. title shot last year, where he gets his ass kicked all game, and then or all match, I should say, and then he randomly wins with a roll-up. So it's a little played out that I get he's the underdog. Lots of fans like him, but I wish he would show a little more resolve, especially because Hiroshi Tanahashi just won his second round match against Bad Luck Fale, so Tanahashi and Juice are going to face each other in the semis to get to the finals. And if Juice can barely beat Elgin with a roll-up after getting thrown around, he don't stand a chance in hell against Tanahashi.
Now, boss, you do understand that the outcomes are predetermined, right?
No way, really?
Yeah, oh. Man, they script this whole thing, man. Like, seriously, that's where the magic happens.
Oh, so we're not actually supposed to care about the character or the story they're telling because it's all predetermined anyway. So they're basically just faces in the fog, just nameless, shapeless faces just doing their job.
You don't have to be a nerd your whole life, Balls. You're a grown-ass man, dude. You can make a decision that I want to be cool, you know. You can
this
make that decision.
This coming from you, Mr. Cena can do whatever he wants because he's Cena. He's a 16-time scripted champion. Yeah. That's great. Uh-huh.
He's also one half of the highest grossing WrestleMania in the history of WrestleMania. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Yeah, thanks to The Rock, who was a freaking movie star for the 10 years before that or something like that. So
he wasn't fighting a broom, Balls. He wasn't fighting a broom.
Because Cena can't fight a broom. He's not Shawn Michaels or AJ Styles.
Or Ric Flair.
Or Kota Ibushi.
Woo!
Or Kota Ibushi.
Touche.
I mean, Kota Ibushi fought a blow-up doll and made that look good, so that's basically the same thing as a broom.
I thought that was Omega that fought the blow-up doll.
That was both of them, because Yoshihiko is the blow-up doll in DDT Championship Wrestling, or DDT Pro Wrestling, whatever the hell it's called. And shit, I mean, DDT's got a belt called the Heavy Metal Weight Championship, where literally anybody can hold that title. You just pin them. I think like Joey Ryan got pinned because he laid down to take a nap, and then some little girl came over and sat on him and got a three count because the ref just happened to be walking by and saw. Like, it is literally the most ridiculous crap. It's funny as shit, don't get me wrong, but that's definitely where you just go to watch it and have fun, because if you Jim Cornette even a little bit, you're going to give yourself an aneurysm.
I'm pretty sure, Balls, you're going to have a match with a blow-up doll as soon as we get off these airwaves.
Have you been checking my webcam? How do you know? Did you hack my phone?
You just fit the description.
I mean, you got a point. You got a point. I mean,
first
I got
a white dude's ever heard that phrase. I can tell you that in America.
The description. Ah, you're male and white. I see. Yes, Caucasian. You fit it completely. Wait,
well,
what?
I mean, the must be Muslim. the creepy mustache doesn't help, nor do the bangs. I'm just saying. Or the Andy from Smart Tech in the 40-year-old version polo you got on right now, man. Like, you're giving me them vibes, bro. You're giving the vibes.
You know, it's a business casual environment where I work. So you think I'm gonna put on a nice shirt or like a tie? No, I'm gonna put the polo shirt on, especially when I feel like crap. You really think I care? I'm just happy I washed my hair. That's all that one was. Like, it was a bad day. Come on.
That's fair enough, man. You're all accountant, so you probably wear two big khakis that look like Junko jeans and a sport coat that's two sizes too big and your glasses with the tape in the middle. And, you know, you make jokes like, huh, look at me.
I hate you.
Look at me. I'm Captain Crunch. I mean, Captain Crunch. I guess the only thing I crunch isn't numbers, is it? And you make corny jokes like that.
The fact that you could even come up with that is sad. Anyway, back to the topic on hand, the New Japan Cup. So tomorrow, or the 15th, I should say, so we Friday. Have...
Tomorrow, you're right. No. Today. Actually, it happened already today, but go ahead.
Yes.
Way to break kayfabe. Yeah, way to break kayfabe, but go ahead.
Well, we don't know what the freaking outcome is. How can I be like, yes, today is Thursday when the show hasn't started yet, so I'm just going to assume that Toru Yano and Sonata made it through or something like that. Like, come on.
You're supposed to be a broadcast journalist, for Christ's sakes, balls. Come on, man.
We're not talking about Chico. I can't just make shit up on the spot to be funny. Like, as far as I can go, is Tanahashi and Juice. The winner of that makes it to the finals, and they face... the winners of the combination of Sonata, Toru Yano, Zack Sabre Jr., and I think I'm forgetting somebody. God damn it. Whoever I'm forgetting probably doesn't matter anyway, because Sabre Jr. and... Oh, Ibushi. Ooh, I just insulted you indirectly. I forgot about Ibushi for a second. Because Ibushi faces Zack Sabre Jr., and Sonata faces Toru Yano. And Ibushi and Sabre Jr. had a match at G1 last year, which was pretty damn good. And this one should definitely be good, too. What are your thoughts, Platt?
Well, first and foremost, that collared shirt you're wearing looks tight as Nat Booty. See? You can make up funny things on the spot. It can happen.
Nat Booty?
Really?
Can you give me the really? White definition of that? Can you use that in a white sentence, sir?
Okay,
country of origin.
Give me a second. Your shirt appears to be a couple of sizes too snug for your particular frame of body. How's
oh,
that?
Well, thank you. Yes. That is just because I'm very, I have broad shoulders, sir, so everything looks tight on me.
That's you're vascular now. Is that what you
I am vascular, yes. I am like Tommaso Ciampa, vascular. My vascularity is off the charts.
God damn it, he's vascular. And every time you lift that snow cone to your face, man, your bicep curls a little bit, huh?
I do that on purpose because it just makes everything look bigger. I mean, that's why I like small girls. Like,
well, let me ask you this. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
I'm ambidextrous, depending on what we're talking about.
Fair enough. So that's why both your arms look swole. I can get it. All right, Popeye.
So... Now, I know you're probably biased to Ibushi because you have a little bit of a man crush on him, but how do you see this New Japan Cup playing out?
Beautiful man. Which one do you do?
I ain't going to complain about that. You right.
I'm all Ibushi all the time, man, and I'm totally in on him. That's how I see the New Japan Cup playing out.
So even if it's Ibushi versus Tanahashi, you think Ibushi got this in the bag?
Tanahashi, it's weird, man, because Tanahashi is kind of like the Cena of New Japan. Every time you think that, okay, he should probably put the other guy over and step aside a little bit, that's when he ends up going over. But I think he's got enough respect for Ibushi and his abilities that he would be willing to do the honors for Ibushi. And I could be totally wrong here. I'm just really basically talking out of my ass, but I felt like it sounded like I was smart and knew what I was talking about.
It sounded pretty good for a second, especially with all with all the Golden Lover stuff, which I know you probably didn't see the interview, but they interviewed Kenny and Ibushi, I think, shortly after their confrontation with the Young Bucks. And
are they going to consummate, by the way?
Oh, maybe. I mean, they didn't go that far. Like, you know, that's special to them. It's Japan. They're a very reserved society. They're not going to ask him that question. But the point I'm the point I'm getting at is Kenny said that he's not paying attention to any singles titles or singles events until the drama with Bullet Club is over. Ibushi, on the other hand, has absolutely no issue with, you know, winning the New Japan Cup and beating Okada and all this other stuff. So their values at the moment don't exactly line up. Like, they may be BFFs. They may be more than that. But currently, it seems like Ibushi is still shooting for the stars, and Kenny is trying to stay a little more grounded in the situation at hand with Bullet Club, and he's not biting off more than he can chew.
There's a great joke in there about biting off more than you can chew, but again, somebody told me we're trying to get sponsors, so I can't say it. That's
fair. Hey, I threw it out there because, you know, other people can marinate on that and take it wherever they want. Some of the fun in jokes and innuendo is not saying it. That's why it's innuendo.
Fair enough. And Kenny, let me give you a little bit of advice, man, from a 4-year veteran of a relationship, man. You have to support your partner in all their ambitions, because trust me, his win is your win, Kenny. It's okay. Allow him to be ambitious and shoot for the moon, shoot for the stars, baby, because sometimes you gotta play bass and let the lead singer go out and does what he does. And that's okay, man. And your time will come, Ken. It's okay. Okay, Ken, but a win for Ibushi is a win for you, Ken, and it's a win for the Golden Lovers. And if he wins, you all win, and that's how relationships work.
Very well said. Romantic.
Yeah, you can't argue with anything I just said, like, at all. Like, yeah.
No, you're right. Relationships are all about support and being 50-50, so, wow, this pod got deep. Congratulations, yeah, Platt. That was good. That was good.
See what can happen on a podcast when you talk less?
I had to give you the lead in, though, because you had no clue what the hell was going on with them. So, blah. Give me a little bit of credit.
I didn't give you the lead in. I have no idea what's going on.
All right. So I give you the setup, and you hit the punchline. That's how that one worked. Good job. I'm lead off your cleanup. Thank you.
All right, whatever you say, Best Buy. What's what we got next, man?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Listen up, pro wrestling fans. What do you get when you get the architect, the commissioner, and Mr. Velvet Pipes himself together? Oh, that's right. It's Chair Shot Radio. Make sure you check it out every Friday. TheChairShot.com. We don't want to get it wrong now, slap nuts.
Last topic here on Pod is War. Gentlemen, give us your thoughts on the retiring Muda.
First and foremost, it's wrestling, so you never know if anybody's retired. I mean, Terry Funk has been retiring since 1989. I think that's quite literally as well. He's been retiring since 1989. I think his first retirement was that I Quit match versus Ric Flair at, what, Clash of the Champions? And I truly believe that was 1989. Am I incorrect on that assessment?
You're close. I don't remember exactly. And then ECW happened.
But, I mean, he's literally had, like, 86 retirement matches. And I think I think Terry is still somewhere wrestling right now. But, so, you take... Anyway, the point I was making is that you, when it comes to wrestling retirements, you kind of take them with a grain of salt. But I do want to take this time and just give a shout-out and pay special tribute to the great Muda, man, who is, quite frankly, one of the true greats in the history of our sport, at least in the modern era. Like, we got to give him that, man. I first became acquainted with the great Muda back in the 90s in WCW. They had a very nice relationship with Japan and WCW, and they would exchange talent. And that's when I first saw the great Muda. And everything he did in the ring, man, I found it to be revolutionary. Like, he was so quick, and he was so fluent. And obviously, he did the stereotypical Asian things. He would spit the mist, and he had the kung fu moves and the face paint and all that, and he came out wearing the kimono and all that shit. It is what it is. But as far as just in-ring work, man, he was the first person I saw to perform and execute a moonsault. And his movements in the ring, man, he just seemed to be on another level than a lot of the guys, man. He was quick, he was fluid, and it didn't feel like there was any wasted movements when he was inside the ring. So he obviously caught my eye. And you can see how influential he has been to the next crop of wrestlers coming after him, man. Like, I think his influence goes without saying. So I just want to give him his props on that. And if it truly is his swan song, him and his bionic knees, well, then so be it, man. And he deserves all the credit in the world. I lost track of him a little bit after the 90s. I know he's still been wrestling this, you know, this whole time. He went on to own All Japan for a little bit. That didn't go particularly well, but that's neither here nor there. We've all got hiccups in our lives. But I just want to take this time and shout out the great Muta, man, and pop my collar to him, man. I don't think I'm overstating it at all. I feel as if in terms of American wrestling, he was one of the driving forces that revolutionized the game.
That's a good point. And I don't know, could you really say that what he did initially was the stereotypical Asian thing when, now I might be wrong in this because my 80s knowledge is foggy at best, but aside from Great Kabuki, I think Muta was only the second one that made any kind of international footprint to do The Mist. Then it kind of became known with, you know, the Asian stereotype because Tajiri did it. And now you see people that aren't even of Asian descent do it, like Rosemary, who's currently in Impact Wrestling and all that other stuff. And you're also completely right with the way he moved. I mean, I wouldn't call it fluid as much as I would call it frenetic, because the way he would hit the ropes and then do like that odd stomp before he'd twist his body and hit that elbow or hit some kind of like leg drop, or the way he just contort himself and kick you, like, it was all done with a purpose, but it was done in a way that we've never seen before. At least,
well, that's
on a
what
grander scale.
And that's what I went and what I meant, man. And maybe I misspoke when I said fluid, but what I should have said was, inside of that ring, there was no wasted movements, and everything that he did in that ring, like you said, it had meaning and it had purpose. So maybe that's how I should have stated it.
Oh no, definitely. And just a slight adjustment: his knees are not bionic yet. He recently had his swan song on Wrestle One, because that's the company he currently owns, is Wrestle One, obviously in Japan. And he promoted it as Keiji Muto's last moonsault, because it's the last moonsault he will ever do with his actual knees, because I think that was a couple days ago, and then his Great Muta retirement match should be later in the week or early next week, I forget. But that's when he's retiring then, because at the end of the month, he's getting double knee surgery, and I think they were looking at 2 years of rehab before he can even think of coming back. And Muta's already like 55, 56. So we're looking at nearly a 60-year-old man trying to come back, which, as you said, there's Terry Funk, who I don't think he'll stop wrestling until he's dead. Then All Japan still uses Dory Funk Jr. in some of their opening matches, and he's like 9,000.
Are you kidding me? Are you serious?
Yes, I think we've had this conversation before. Maybe it was just so shocking you forgot. But yeah, Dory Funk does his spinning toe hold at the slowest. Like, I'm pretty sure Smell in Molasses moves faster than he does. And it's just some of the harshest things to see. But the Japanese audience loves nostalgia, and they also love loyalty. So the fact that the Funks were very big in Japan and helped to put, you know, helped to bring in some American influence and help branch them out there, they owe a lot to the Funks, and the fans are very respectful of the history. So even if the match is garbage, which most of his matches are, because he's like 90 and can barely move.
Dude, like, and you have said that before, man, now that you jog my memory, even though you used it to try to play me. By the way, I love when you say you kind of have a point in your little smug-ass way, because I know you getting ready to bury me in your little smug-ass low-key way. I love when you say that. I just had to point that out as well. But, I mean, Terry Funk's 86, so that means Dory Funk Jr.'s got to be like 900 BC.
Yeah, he is Methuselah, basically. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. His first match was doing the job to John the Baptist, man.
So, yes. And that's the whole thing. Like, Japan eats up nostalgia, which is why you get, like, Masahiro Chono You know, he was big before. I think he basically retired now, and he just does commentating occasionally for New Japan. Yeah, but nothing stopping him from coming back out. Ricky Choshu did an event earlier this year, which he main evented in like a six-man with Ibushi and a few other people. And, you know, Ricky Choshu's pretty old. I think he's 60-something because he's an 80s name. And it's just a Japanese thing where they really, really love nostalgia and tradition. And as sad as it is to say, 60-year-old Japanese wrestlers still move better than 60-year-old American wrestlers. So, I mean, at least it's less painful to watch.
Yeah, that's fair, man. I got to imagine, man, you'll be in much better shape if all you eat is fish and rice. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's a little healthier lifestyle in Asia as opposed to here in America. So that makes sense. But I just want to point this out there, man. I'm just going to say this and put it out into the universe and let the universe do its thing. Next year, Wrestle Kingdom, Harley Race, Bruno Sammartino. Universe, make it happen.
Oh, God, no. Please, no.
Make it happen. Make it happen.
No. I don't want to make
it happen. Make it happen.
No, the universe says no. It just called me. It said, no, it's not happening. Ultimo Dragon versus Liger is going to happen before that one.
Number one, that was your Uber Eats driver that was calling you. Number two, universe, make it happen.
Hey, you know, don't bury Uber Eats. That could be a possible sponsor. You never know.
And they owe me a free meal, man, because they screwed me last week. So I kind of have beef with them. I have beef with Uber and Uber Eats. So holla at me.
Was that your undercooked burger?
No, I totally forgot about the undercooked burger. I got major beef with Uber Eats now. Yes.
Beef. I get it.
Ha ha ha. No, not funny.
So, Mr. Tunney, are you feeling well enough to continue our Mania Madness?
As we are on the road to New Orleans and WrestleMania, we are into the other half of the quarterfinal round of Mania Madness. Now, we put the four combatants from the first pool into one pool, and boy oh boy did the second place finish come out by the narrowest of margins. So I know Mr. Platt was very surprised to see that the first advancee of pool number one was Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 31.
Boom.
52.
Yeah, I don't understand 52, that.
52% of the vote. Now, yeah. John Cena and The Rock at WrestleMania 28 came in last place with only 7% of the vote. But by one percentile, The Undertaker at WrestleMania 33 would defeat Macho Man at WrestleMania 4. So the two moving on will be The Undertaker, WrestleMania 33, and Seth Rollins, WrestleMania 31.
So we both got one. That's nice. It's like a participation trophy. Everybody wins.
It's stupid, man. I can't even call them creatures of the moment because the Taker thing happened just last year. But, I mean, the Seth Rollins thing, it was a really cool moment. I was there live to experience it. It was awesome. But, yeah, screw you guys. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Oh, I'm too sick to do that, damn you.
Hey, Lois Reed, when I farted, that was your action.
Oh, God.
Let's move on to the second round of the quarterfinals here, the second pool, you will. Now, this week,
Splash.
Andrew, you will be promoting, if you will, the Eddie and Chris Benoit WrestleMania 20, along with... along with the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6, while Platt has HBK... A Boyhood Dream Realized at WrestleMania 12, along with Daniel Bryan's WrestleMania 33 Yes Movement. Andrew, kick us off. Eddie and Chris Benoit, WrestleMania 20.
Oh, I could just say, I could just say all of my choices are dead, so pity me. Come on.
Yeah, fair enough.
Ouch.
I can't argue that. Yeah, he's got a point. Vote for him, America.
Yeah, vote for me. Everybody's dead that I had to pick. No. Eddie and Chris Benoit.
My friends are dead. All my friends are dead.
Good. That was a good reference. I'll give you that one. Take that out of the equation, because that's going to basically make Benoit end up last because of the name, and the name is Radioactive Nuclear Heat. Almost, I mean, I can't even think of someone that has more heat than Benoit's name. So, if we try not to think about that, what he did afterwards, the actual moments with not only Eddie beating Kurt just by cheating and being sneaky with untying his boot because he knew Kurt was going to put the ankle lock on again, and then, you know, the boot comes off and he rolls him up while putting his feet over the rope just to pin him down even further. So it was multiple levels of cheating and cleverness. Like, it was a great match on top of all of that. So perfect character development, perfect moment just for Eddie to go over. And then Benoit, that was a nice culmination story. Benoit was one of the stars of WCW that didn't really get to shine as strongly as people would have wanted him to, because he was easily the most, him and Malenko were probably the most technical wrestlers in WCW. Now, not just the cruiserweights, just in general, you don't get more technical than those two. And
I don't forget the Ultimo Dragon, though.
I mean, Dragon was good, but he wasn't as technical. Like, he had a lot of stuff, but he also did a lot more high flying.
I mean, you could also throw Chavo in there as well. We're just talking about technical.
Chavo was watered down. Like, Chavo wasn't bad, but compared to Eddie, he was average. Either way, the point I'm getting at, though, is he was a mat technician.
Per inning, well, you know, he was in WCW. Now I'm just fucking with you, but go ahead.
Yes, I know. Benoit was a mat technician. He had amazing ability for submissions, for high-flying with the headbutt, and put on so many classics between Japan, WCW, and this was just the culmination of his entire career. Everybody loved him in WWF and WCW, and it was nice to finally see him get that moment. His celebrating with Eddie, his celebrating with the family, like, that was just such a good, good moment. It was a feel-good moment, and like I said, take away what we know. Let's not apply that against this, because we're talking about WrestleMania 20 in a vacuum. We're not talking about Benoit and Guerrero as people or how they died or anything that happened afterwards. 20 in a vacuum was one of the better feel-good moments that have happened in WrestleMania history.
Mr. Platt, expound on HB Shizzle realizing his boyhood dream, WrestleMania 12.
I mean, it was the culmination of arguably the greatest American in-ring performer in the history of the business. Point blank, period. I mean, you know, we've all followed Shawn Michaels' career. I'm assuming that most people here were fans of the Rockers when the Rockers first came on the scene. Shout out to Party Jannetty again.
Jesus.
Meet Party Jannetty, man, and tell me you don't fall in love with the Melon Farmer. That's all I'm saying.
Party Jannetty just jumped through that window.
He was trying to get away from it. Oh, no.
Yeah. So then he branches off, man. Really good gimmick, man. Him and Sensational Sherry. It just fits his personality to a T. He's got the girl there with him. He goes on to the Intercontinental Glory. And quite frankly, I'm not even going to lie, man. This particular WrestleMania holds a special place in my heart because it got me back into wrestling. Not going to lie to you. Because you know how it is, man, with wrestling. Occasionally, you take a break here and there. And this was actually came across during one of my break periods. And the two things that wrote me into buying WrestleMania 12 was, number one, the Warrior was returning. So, you know, shout out to Warrior. And number two, you had Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart in a Iron Man match. And I remember seeing Iron Man matches. I'd seen a really good Iron Man match. I think it was only 30 minutes, though. Ricky Steamboat versus Ravish and Rick Rude in WCW. So I was a fan of the Iron Man match and some others. You had seen Flair wrestle for an hour, blah, this, blah, that. So I was a fan of that. And I was a fan of both guys in ring work. I was never really the biggest fan of Bret Hart, his character, because I just thought he was corny until he kind of went to the dark side. But that's neither here nor there. But I knew these guys put on a classic. And I feel like this match somehow, some way, is actually underrated in the lores of WWE. Obviously, it's an hour, and looking at it through a 2018 lens, it's very hard to keep somebody's attention for a whole hour. But these guys did a really good job in that match, and I was, you know, it kept my attention the entire time, man. So this particular moment was the start of something big. So think of it like this. Think of HBK pinning Bret Hart and the boyhood dream and the culmination and all of that. Think about it as Michael Jackson leaving the Jackson 5 and going to record Off the Wall, which in itself is a fantastic album and is arguably his best album musically. But obviously, he went on to Thriller, he went on to this, he went on to that, and he just became a cultural icon. That's where this moment is. This was Michaels leaving his brothers behind moment. And that's the same thing with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 12.
The Ultimate Warrior, reigning supreme, WrestleMania 6. Walking out with both belts.
Yeah, the Ultimate Showdown, I think it was called. And the opening graphic was, it basically reminded me of those glow-in-the-dark, like, stars and planet stickers that you had as a child that you'd put on your ceiling because they started with constellations and trying to make it seem larger than life because it was the ultimate confrontation or the ultimate showdown. And it was such a big deal at the time. You had two of the biggest names. You had Hogan, which is still arguably the biggest name in American wrestling, and then you had Ultimate Warrior, who was up and coming for years. And yes, of course, let's not forget they were both beloved baby faces, so no matter who won, the crowd was going to pop. And to be fair, I rewatched this match a little bit because I was foggy on it, and I kind of was just curious how they really performed through the 2018 purview. And as a match, as a wrestling match, it was done beautifully. They both played off of each other's strengths. They both hooked up, or, you know, no sold moves when they needed to. The adrenaline got pumping at the right time. When they were both down, the crowd was never out of it. The crowd was just there, hanging on every motion, every beat, every drop of sweat. Like, the crowd was amazing. Like, I don't think I've heard a crowd as loud in recent, you know, modern wrestling history, because that was deafening from the minute Warrior's music hit and he started running down that long ass, you know, rampway, and all the way to the end. So it was so good. It was like, it had to be the pinnacle of storytelling at that time. It was the passing the torch. It was everything that you wanted in a match. It's what Cena Reigns should have been. It was damn good. Like, even looking at it from what it is today, the story it told and the way they wrestled the match. Yes, it was old school. Yes, it was pretty close to the vest and on the mat, and they went outside a little bit when Hogan feigned the injury. And that was another beautiful addition, where Hogan actually started applying some dirty tactics. You saw him thumb Warrior.
He was always a dirty wrestler. He raked backs and poked eyes and shit. Like, Hogan wrestled as a heel when he was a face, bruh.
Not raking the back, that's a lost move. I don't call that a heel move. I call that That's a 1990s move. You don't see anybody do nowadays. But it was the way Hogan did it was with just more downright disdain and just more drive to keep the belt, and then he'd do anything just to hold Warrior down. And being Mr., you know, eat your vitamins, take your prayers, or take your prayers. Wow.
Take your prayers. Where they taking them balls?
They're taking them to the store because they're drunk and they need to get some coffee. and I need some Robitussin or something. Either way, I am sick, so blah.
You certainly are, plus you're not feeling well.
Well played, yes. Anyway, though, still, great storytelling, great match, great passing the torch. It's Warrior, it's Hogan. You don't get much bigger than that in the 90s.
Christopher Platt, Daniel Bryan, and the Yes Movement, WrestleMania 30.
This is going to win, man, so it is what it is. But before I get to my defense of that, I got to go back and give a little props, man, to WrestleMania 6. I was a little too young to really comprehend. As a matter of fact, I didn't see WrestleMania 3 live. I was too young. I went back and later and watched it on tape. Like, that's what I would do. Whatever money I made, I would just go to Blockbuster Video and just rent all the old wrestling tapes that I hadn't watched and all the old pay-per-views and whatnot.
Shout out to Blockbuster.
Yeah, shout out to Blockbuster, man. And shout out to selling rocks to your neighbors, man, because that's how I got my money back in the day. No, I mean that quite literally. Wait a second. I have to clarify because I'm black, so I know that now. I literally mean rocks. Like, I would go down to the quarry and I would pick rocks and I would spray paint them. And then I would go around to my neighbors and sell them rocks, like quite literally, like rocks that I had spray painted. Yes.
Just for their garden?
Just for whatever, because I was a cute-ass kid that had the gift of gab. So, yeah, you're going to buy rocks off this cute-ass kid.
So they got their rocks off of a cute-ass kid? That's fucked up, dude.
That does. That sounds like some Jared from Subway shit, man.
What that does.
That's the sound of the police!
Yeah, Pedal Bear, I guess, approves. But anyway, get to your point.
But yeah, so that being said, man, Hogan Warrior at WrestleMania 6, that was my Hogan Andre. That was my WrestleMania 3. That was my culmination of the irresistible force between the unmovable object, man, and the two powers just colliding. This was like God and the devil just colliding. Not saying either one was God or the devil, but you understand the magnitude of what clash in wrestling match meant to me. And I was a Hulkamaniac, man. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I was a Hulkamaniac, and when Hogan lost, I was crying right there with Hulk Hogan like a little bitch. I'm not going to lie to you, man. When Hogan took that L, I was sitting there crying with Hulk Hogan as well, because I thought that represented the end of the Hulkamania era and the start of the Warrior era. Obviously, that wasn't what it was, and Hogan was back, 6 months later? But that's
the same thing when Hogan went NWO. I was so betrayed as a child, I started crying. I think I even broke a toy.
But that's the impact that Hogan had on us as wrestling fans. Like, you know, we're not talking about his later years and when I found out, you know, he doesn't like black people, whatever. But that's the impact that he had. And quite frankly, if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, none of us would be here right now. The three of us would not be here doing this podcast, man. I think that's fair to say. Am I wrong in that assertion?
I agree with it.
Yeah,
before you move on to Daniel Bryan, when do you guys think Hulk Hogan, or if he will ever come back to the WWE?
He'll come back, man. I don't really see what value he has put him on television, or at least even letting him go on the media circuit, because they're going to be asking him questions that he's not going to be able to answer. But he's going to be back eventually, man. He said, throw him down there in NXT, man. I mean, he's one of the most over guys in the history of this business, man. You're telling me he can't help those young men and women get over and teach them how to get over? Throw him down there in NXT, man, and let him train some of the next generation.
Or you know what you do? You pair him with Braun, since he needs a tag team partner. Braun and Hogan, they sound exactly alike. Hogan gets another title reign, and he doesn't have to do anything except drop a leg.
That's terrible, but that's just me, and that's personal issues. So, but yeah.
It's no worse than Taker coming back out of retirement.
Daniel Bryan, WrestleMania 30.
I mean, this is going to win, man. How much do I really have to say about this, man? The Daniel Bryan story is amazing, man. I mean, he started out on the indie circuit as he was, what was it, Ultimate Dragon for a while, right? Or American Dragon for a while. American Dragon for a while. Then he wrestled under his real name, Bryan Danielson, and he created a nice buzz for him. It was kind of like hip-hop, man. He kind of wrestled on the underground and got his buzz up. And then he finally makes it to the big show, WWE. He goes on the show. Tough Enough and Miz is his trainer, whatever. They do the Nexus angle. He gets fired for apparently going too ham during the angle. I don't really understand the situations or circumstances of which he got fired, but whatever.
Because he choked a dude with a tie.
Yeah, he went too ham.
Yeah.
So they fire him. They bring him back. And, you know, everybody, he's got a little buzz going. He's got a little buzz, but the knock on him is, oh, yeah, he's a great in-ring performer, but he's a little too small, and he's not good on the mic. So then they put him in situations, and you could see slowly but surely his personality would slowly but surely start to seep out, man. The stuff with him and AJ was gold. The him stuff with him and Kane, that was awesome. And I think that's where the turning point really came, when he was in the tag team with Kane and Team Hell No, and they did the backstage vignettes and the skits and whatnot. I think that's when he really kind of caught his stride as a performer, not just in ring, but in terms of being comfortable on the mic and being able to show his personality, man. And that's when he really caught fire. And then you fast forward to that, he wins the world title, which was basically the Part B title, and then he's supposed to have the match with Sheamus. It gets bumped, and then he finally has the match with Sheamus, and then it's 18 seconds, and now everybody's rallying for him, and it just built to a perfect crescendo, man. And then again, they weren't going to put him in that WrestleMania 30 main event, allegedly, and then he finds himself in the WrestleMania 30 main event after he beats Triple H, which was the best show on the card, if you ask me. And it just built perfectly, man. Like, you can't even write a story like that. It is truly the perfect storybook ending. It's just unfortunate that they put him in a feud with Kane shortly after he became champion, and then he got hurt, and it kind of went downhill. But the whole Daniel Bryan story, man, is very Shakespearean in it. It really is, man. It had the highest of highs, and then it had this low crescendo, and it was just all bad after that. But I mean, there's not much I really have to say on this. We all know this is going to win the poll.
Yeah, this is the fight for second place.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Like, I'm not arguing there, because everybody loves Brian. And you know what's going to be fun? Brian versus Seth Rollins, if it gets that far.
Oh, well, oh, you don't mean literally. You mean okay? You don't mean literally. Okay.
No, in the purview of our tournament. Yes, yes. The Seth Rollins moment versus Daniel Bryan. Whose IWC fandom is bigger?
that is going to be interesting, because I would argue Bryan is the better moment just because of how emotionally invested everybody was in that storyline. But the Seth moment was so awesome because everybody just was under the assumption that this was going to be the Reigns coronation, and that's not what anybody wanted. And then he just comes out and it's like CrossFit Jesus came out and saved us. You know?
No, yeah. And at least Rollins still wrestles, so it's that whole out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. So people have seen Rollins pull off more impressive things, so he's got, I guess, a better taste in people's mouth currently. And their stories are similar, where they both started in ROH. Yes, Daniel Bryan's story is more organic, which is why it was nicely Shakespearean. But who knows? I think that's where it's going to end up, and then I don't know who wins that finals.
Whatever.
So, to vote on this week's quarterfinal pool, go to @ChairShotRadio on the Twitter. Eddie and Chris, WrestleMania 20. Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 12. Daniel Bryan, WrestleMania 30. Or the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6. Next week on PIW Pod is War, we will have the semifinals.
Andrew, man, why don't you let the good people know where they can find you?
You can find me. You can find me on the Twitter at @IWCWarChief. You can email me at AndrewBelez@thechairshot.com and tell me exactly how terrible I sounded, not only because of my opinions, but because of the fact that I'm stuffed up and sick of shit. Platt, where can people find you, buddy?
Well, frankly, you can find me at your local watering hole in the Atlanta, Georgia area. That's probably the best place to find me, but if you can't make it to the Atlanta area, you can find me at The Real C Platt on Twitter. And you can find all of us and many more great personalities and authors at the chairshot.com. Not sometimes, not every now and again, but always use your head. Folks, we played through this. Shout out to Andrew Balls. This was his Jordan with the flu game, folks. I'm not even going to lie. I got to put him over a little bit, man. He held it down. He held it down like an anvil on a seesaw. So for the commission PC Tunney, for Andrew Snowflake Balls, folks, my name is Christopher Platt. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Pod is War. Until next time, shalom. Hit it, Carly. Walked in. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. She was talking about me, though.
Probably.
We should have used MASH. We should have used MASH theme song for the beginning of this fucking podcast.
That would have been hilarious, man.
Yeah, it would have been good.